All right, put that seatbelt on. We have a very busy news day ahead of us. I'm Bill Buckmaster, along with my buddy, Tom Fairbanks. Call him Buddy Fairbanks. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. Tom, 87 days without a drop of rain. It all ended yesterday. It was nice.
Yes, it was. Various parts of the Tucson Metroplex. Can we call it the Metroplex?
Yeah, we can. I think maybe about anywhere from just kind of a trace to maybe up to a tenth of an inch. Who knows?
I don't know what the measurement was here in the studio area, but we got a pretty good yesterday afternoon.
Yeah, very nice to get that rain. By the way, that was the 11th longest dry streak without rain in Tucson since they've been keeping records back to the 1890s. We are in the Green Thing Zocalo Village studio at the Bustos Media Center in central Tucson, where we have five radio stations under one roof. This one's 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted news and talk. We began our 15th year with the radio show in early January. It's my 37th year in Tucson broadcasting. We have our worldwide live listening, all of our podcasts at buckmastershow.com, our telephone interviews for the Buckmaster Show Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. So much going on. And by the way, our contributor on aviation, Jeff Lattice, retired JetBlue pilot, will give us his take on that tragic air accident just outside of Washington, D.C., last night. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., President Trump's pick to run the top U.S. health agency, went before the Senate Health Committee today after being grilled by Democrats on a different committee yesterday over his past comments on vaccines and his shifting stance on abortion rights. Let's get the take of our public education public health contributor, Will Humble, the executive director of the Arizona Public Health Association. Will's the former director of the Arizona Department of Health Services. Will's on the live line. Hey, Will.
Good afternoon, Bill. How are you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for asking. Busy news day. Let's begin with RFK Jr. Today he went before the Senate Health Committee. You know, the reports I've read, Will, he didn't really seem to have much of a knowledge of our healthcare system in some of the questioning and his answers yesterday.
Yeah, I didn't watch the whole thing. I caught snippets of it. There were areas where I thought he did okay and he was knowledgeable. There were other areas that he clearly was uninformed around, especially the Medicaid. In Arizona, that's our state access Medicaid program. Here's the thing. You know, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services is the parent agency for the Food and Drug Administration, the CDC, the National Institutes of Health, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, the Health Resources Service Administration, SAMHSA, and I'm leaving some out. So no nominee, I'm not defending him here, I'm just saying no nominee is going to be 100% up to speed on all of the things that happen in all of those agencies. Mm-hmm. So you have to give the guy a little bit of grace with respect to not knowing some of the answers, given the portfolio that HHS had. You can get into more questions. I'm not a fan of Mr. Kennedy's nomination, but with respect to not knowing some of those answers yesterday, that to me, that's not as troubling as some of the other things that came up in the hearing.
Well, he founded, Will Humble, the anti-vaccine group. I believe it was, it's titled the Children's Health Defense, and he argued that he was not against vaccines. I don't know.
Well, no, he's saying that now, but he's been anti-vaccine for decades and has been making a handsome living off of being anti-vaccine. And so, you know, this is a shifting position. So there are things I agree with him on. I think, you know, the food stamp program, SNAP, should have some boundaries on what people could buy. So that I'm not against everything that he believes. But with respect to vaccines, which probably the number one most effective public health intervention of all time, mm-hmm. not just of the last 100 years, but of all time. To be against vaccines, which has transformed our expectations around, people used to have 8 kids hoping it was free to live, back before vaccines, So that is super troubling that he would, for decades, be a vaccine, which is a primary, very important, monumental public health achievement.
Hey, Will, we're having trouble hearing you. I don't know if you're moving around, and I know you've got a new cell phone, so I don't think it's the cell phone, but you were kind of breaking up. So Tom's telling me just sort of stay in one position or move to a better position. You are breaking up.
Yeah, I moved out to a better spot.
There you go. We're hearing it. So could you kind of just pick up on that last couple of sentences that you were giving us about Kennedy?
Yeah, I don't want to spend too much time on it. It's really troubling to have an HHS nominee for that position that has a decades-long track record against vaccines, and not just individual vaccines because of minor technical issues, but just broad objection to vaccines. And that what that demonstrates to me is somebody who doesn't use evidence to drive their opinions. And to me, that's probably the number one qualification for an HHS secretary, is to let evidence and data drive what you believe, rather than having a pre-existing set of things that you believe and then pick and choose data to support that position, which has been the track record of Mr. Kennedy, in my opinion.
So the United States' intent to leave the World Health Organization, should we be very troubled about this, or is it not a big deal, Will?
I'd say in between. So the World Health Organization is a group that's associated with the United Nations. Its basic mission is to provide public health and some healthcare assistance to developing countries. And a lot of their work involves, for example, the polio eradication project that's eradicated here in the U.S., but still is present in some of the developing world, especially Afghanistan, Pakistan, parts of Nigeria. So TB, tuberculosis control, if you remember about 10 years ago, there was that Ebola outbreak in West Africa, and WHO was instrumental in getting past that outbreak. So it's a really important organization for developing countries. Now, you asked me how bad is it that we're leaving, and I said medium. That's because, number one, the U.S. contributes about 18% of the World Health Organization's budget, mm-hmm. and the Biden administration prepaid the dues for 2025. So if we end up leaving WHO, at least they're going to have a whole year to figure out how they're going to fill that gap in their budget. My guess is that you're going to see China jumping at that opportunity, because when we leave the World Health Assembly and the executive body for the World Health Organization, we will no longer be in the club. Mm-hmm. If you're not in the club, you can't have an opinion. And so we're going to cede our global public health leadership to basically China if this happens. And I don't think that's a good thing, but at least there's a year for the WHO to figure out how they're going to fill their budget. And so that's basically where we are. If you want me to prognosticate, I think what's going to end up happening is the administration is going to figure out that by leaving the World Health Organization, they are ceding our leadership to China, and I think they're going to change their mind and join back up. But we'll see.
Cutting off all federal aid really does impact, and there's been talk of cutting it. I don't know if it was paused or this is going to be permanent, but millions of people depend on vaccines around the world that are supplied by the United States, Will.
Yeah, so that remains to be seen what would happen. That would not be part of the World Health Organization. That's other parts of the national foreign aid portfolio. So it remains to be seen, what will be happening as the Trump administration progresses in terms of how generous we would continue to be in some of these other public health programs that are not associated with the WHO. You know, the WHO will continue whether the U.S. is a member or not. You know, the U.S. Agency for International Development would presumably continue, but it's too early to know, you know, what the appointees for Mr. Trump are going to think about and what their priorities will be with USAID. We'll see.
All right, coming up next, Will Humble. There's a respiratory virus that a lot of people have probably never heard of, but it's having an impact in Arizona. We'll talk to Will about that after we take our first break. Segment one break. It's Buckmaster Thursday. By the way, it's Attorney General Chris Mays, our Friday Focus interview tomorrow. That's at noon tomorrow. Tim Steller from the Arizona Daily Star joins me in the questioning of the AG. But right now, the break, then back to Will Humble. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com.
Take the Regional Transportation Authority's brief survey of its draft $2.46 billion Regional Transportation Plan. The 20-year RTA Next Draft Plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, and environmental improvements for the greater Tucson region. The RTA Board will consider your feedback before it prepares a final draft for voter consideration as early as November 2025. We invite you to take our brief survey at rtanext.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Bill Buckmaster with you on a very busy day this Thursday afternoon on KVOI. The Buckmaster Show contributor on public health is Will Humble, who is the former director for the Arizona Department of Health. And Will is now the executive director for the Arizona Public Health Association. He puts out a terrific health-related blog. If you just Google Arizona Public Health Association, it will get you to Will and some of the stuff he's been writing about. And there's this respiratory virus. A lot of us had the RSV shot. I know I had it. Can't remember if it was last fall or the fall before. That was kind of the respiratory virus everybody was talking about. What's this new one that's having an impact here, Will?
It's called the human metapneumovirus.
What?
And it's really actually, it's actually pretty similar to RSV. It's in the same family of viruses. There's no vaccine for it. There's a vaccine for RSV, but there's not a vaccine for this human metapneumovirus. And that, I think, as many of your listeners will know, people or they themselves have had what they would describe as a really bad cold that stayed on for a long time that caused lots of congestion. I'm pretty sure I had it.
Mm-hmm.
It lasted about 2 weeks. And I didn't get a laboratory test, so I can't tell you for sure that's what I had. But it's really going around in Arizona. So it's essentially it's a really bad cold, but similar symptoms to RSV virus.
Yeah, we've had several people here at the station with what they characterize as bronchitis, just can't seem to shake it. Would the vaccine that those of us that took the RSV, would that have any protective measures for this one?
Nope.
Oh.
It's in the same family, but it doesn't provide any protection from this one. It does for RSV, but not this human metapneumovirus.
Do you get
any nasty one?
Any immunity from it once you've had it?
Oh, the human metapneumovirus? You won't get it again this season.
Mm-hmm.
It's possible that you would have some protection probably next year, but not much after that. So it's. When you get an infection with this, you're probably okay for a couple of years, but not a whole lot longer.
How about RSV and COVID this winter?
Yeah, so RSV is actually pretty tame. And I think that's because last year was off the charts bad, which means a lot of people got RSV and then got that infection, which means they have the residual immunity, which is a big reason why I don't think we're seeing a lot of RSV circulating. COVID-19 has been really tame this year, too. This winter season, it's been, really not circulating very much. And then influenza was really gangbusters right around, let's say, New Year's mm-hmm. and a little bit before that. And we're now seeing that the influenza infections are on the downswing. So it looks like we are, as we move into February, crossing my fingers, we may be through the worst of the respiratory virus season between what's been going on with metapneumovirus and influenza. And hopefully we don't see COVID-19 picking up steam. So far, it hasn't.
All right. Will Humble is with us on our live line, which is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Tom, do we have David ready to go on the live line? David has a question for Will Humble. Go ahead, David. We will have David. There you go. Okay, David, you're with us now. Go ahead with your question.
Yeah. Last summer, I got what was a real bad cold, and then it went into a cough, a really horrible cough that lasted for 2 weeks. I just wonder what that could be, what could have been.
I'm not a doctor. I'm just going by your symptoms. It's consistent. Did you have a fever?
I did have a fever.
You had a fever? If you had a fever, I would say it's more likely to have been influenza, probably not RSV, although that can present a small fever. Could be a lot of different viruses, but I'm glad you're better.
Could it have been COVID, Will?
It could have been COVID. That's a possibility.
Yeah.
Even if you've been vaccinated or had it before. As we know, you can get it more than once these days.
All right. Thank you, David, for the question. Again, David calling on our live line. Will, you had a blog out about rural Arizona at risk, the dramatic impact of something called, we've heard about it actually, Project 2025 and some Medicare or Medicaid cuts. What's that all about?
Yeah, so I'll be brief. And if people want to go into detail, they can go to the blog. But basically, our state Medicaid program pays covers the insurance for a little under 2 million of our 7.5 million people here in Arizona. And one category of the people that get their health insurance through Medicaid, which is Access, are people called childless adults. And so these are adults who have no children left in the home, but they still qualify financially for Medicaid. And the way Arizona pays for, covering that group of people, there's 500,000 people in that category, is we assess all the hospitals in the state a fee every year. And then that fee goes into a fund that pays for the state portion of the Medicaid program, the access program, and the federal government pays the rest. And ever since the Affordable Care Act, the federal government has picked up 90% of the tab.
Hmm.
And the state picks up 10% for that group of 500,000 people. Under Project 2025, they want to move that from 90% federal contribution to 65%.
Wow.
And if that happens, it's about a $1 billion hit to the state budget here in Arizona, and the hospital assessment goes away, and we would lose the coverage for the childless adults. And unless the legislature finds $1 billion, which you and I know isn't going to happen.
No.
So at least I don't see how it could happen. So, that's the deal in a nutshell is that, but the reason it's a rural issue is, if you look at look across the state and you say, okay, what's the percentage of people that get their health insurance through access through Medicaid? In rural Arizona, it's twice as much.
Hmm.
So about 18 to 19% of urban Arizona gets their health insurance through through access, but in rural Arizona, it's like 33%. So if this happens, it's going to have a much bigger impact in rural Arizona than it will in the urban parts of the state. And quite honestly, there are some of these rural hospitals that just can't afford all the uncompensated care that would come from this. People without health insurance who show up at an emergency department, they're required by law to at least stabilize that patient. And if that patient doesn't have any health insurance, then that's just free care that that hospital is providing. And while our urban hospitals can probably absorb that uncompensated care, these rural hospitals can't, and they've got double the load. So we'll see if this really happens, if they really do cut that reimbursement rate. I know there's a lot of people trying to get Representative Ciscomani to pay attention to this, to make sure that he understands what would happen in his district. I mean, some people feel like of our delegation in Arizona, he's the person who is most likely to listen. So I'm sure his phones are ringing off the hook, trying to get his attention to so that he understands if they do, lower that federal contribution for the childless adults, what impact it would have in his district.
Getting health care in rural Arizona is a huge problem, Will, and hospitals are kind of few and far between. Case in point, what happened down in Green Valley, they built a hospital. I think it was my friend Dan Shear, the Green Valley News, told us here on the show a week or so ago. I think they spent about $75 million. Now the thing's on the auction block for a couple of million dollars and empty.
Yeah, I mean, whenever you build a hospital, you got to make sure that you're going to have a payer mix that's nearby that allows you to be solvent. And you have to be able to recruit, the kinds of the physicians and specialties that the people in that area need. There's a lot of homework that needs to go into this. And, the thing is that these hospitals make these investments with an understanding that there's the Affordable Care Act in place and that we've got Medicaid coverage for everyone, including who qualifies, including childless adults. And that's the trouble with making a fast change like this and changing that reimbursement rate. All of a sudden you have 500,000 people uncovered here in the state, and the rural hospitals especially just are simply unprepared to deal with that.
Yeah, so many questions as the administration changes in D.C. There's a lot of people scratching their head trying to figure out what's next. How about our state legislature? I know you keep an eye on public health matters. That's part of your role at the Arizona Public Health Association. Anything you're eyeballing that our listeners should keep an eye on for?
Yeah, just actually there's some pretty, I think, decent bills running through the legislature so far this year. There's been a number of consumer protection bills. One's up next week in, I think it's the Senate Regulatory Affairs Committee, that would require health plans when they deny your an authorization for a procedure that your doctor says you need and your health plan says no, you can't have it. There's some consumer protection language that's being proposed, so that's a good bill. There are a few good bills, I think, around mental health that would improve the ability for family members to get court-ordered treatment for their loved ones, and better systems when you need to be a guardian of your son or daughter who develops a mental illness like schizophrenia, something like that. So a lot of the areas that I'm focusing on are in the behavioral health area, and then consumer protection for to level the playing field, I guess you would say, for people who have private commercial health insurance who are really often not treated fairly.
All right. All right. Will, we can stay connected with Will by visiting Will Humble. That's H-U-M-B-L-E at azpha.org. That's the Arizona Public Health Association. Will, thank you very much. Always a pleasure. We'll check in with you in a month or so.
All right. Take care. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you. Will Humble with us, our contributor on health, public health, and coming up next, the contributor on the Buckmaster Show on aviation, retired JetBlue captain Jeff Lattice, will join us on the live line. I want to hear Jeff's take on in the aftermath of that tragedy in the skies just outside Washington Reagan Airport. We'll be right back on the Buckmaster Show.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on a very busy day. Tomorrow we have the Attorney General for Arizona, Chris Mays, will be our Friday Focus interview. Tim Steller, the award-winning columnist for the Arizona Daily Star, will be my co-media host, guest host tomorrow as we question the AG. Right now I want to tell you a little bit about that demolition sale. That's what we're calling it over at Green Thing / Zocalo Village. I think four or five buildings at Zocalo Village need to be torn down. They're in the floodplain. There's a new building, but rather than move all the stuff over to the new building, why not just drastically reduce it up to 50%? And that's what's going on at Zocalo Village as part of the Green Things brand, 3384 East River Road. And they've got some fantastic hand-carved dining room sets, some of that mesquite. So this is a huge savings that you're going to find at Green Things. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com are the two websites. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. The mid-air collision of a military helicopter and an American Airlines regional jet, a CJR-700, near D.C.'s Reagan National Airport last night, brings an end to a streak of commercial air travel safety that was really unknown to previous generations. The deadliest air disaster, this one last night, on U.S. soil in more than 20 years. Let's bring in now on the live line our contributor on aviation, JetBlue Captain Jeff Lattice, who retired after 20 years with JetBlue, where he flew nearly 20,000 hours of accident-free aviation. Jeff's a highly decorated retired combat fighter pilot. He also worked at the Pentagon as an Air Force Special Weapons Officer. He now trains pilots on business jets. Hey, Jeff, are you with us?
Yeah, Bill, I am. How you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good, and there's a lot of finger-pointing going on, but before we get to that, let's talk a little bit about that airspace that is really, Jeff Lattice, one of the most congested airspaces in the North American continent.
Yes, I've flown into DCA several times. I never enjoyed it. It's always a bit of a challenge going into Reagan National.
And set it up for us. Why is this such a difficult place to fly into?
Okay, well, first, the airport is actually pretty small for a major airport, and it's one of the busiest in the country. It's in the top 20, at least, if not one of the top 10 busiest airports in the country. And it's on a fairly small piece of real estate, sitting right on the banks of the western side of the Potomac. Now, just north of there is the Pentagon, which is a restricted airspace. And then across the river from there, you have the White House, which obviously is a restricted airspace. So not only is it extremely busy there, but it's congested on the corridors that you can use. Obviously, I think this is going to be one of the major contributing factors to this accident, with just the congestion of airspace. So that's kind of the setup. Also, they have made exceptions at Reagan National, which in other airports, airlines probably would not be allowed to do legally.
And that's because
of some of these restricted airspaces. You have to maneuver fairly low in certain cases for the approach.
Jeff, if you would, take us through the approach. And this aircraft that was hit by the helicopter was at only 300 feet. So could you take us through? There's a sharp turn involved usually on the three runways.
Yeah, especially the one that he was on.
Yes.
He's coming in from the south, and things that I don't really understand exactly was he cleared to do an approach to runway 33, or was he cleared to do the approach to 01 and then visually fly over to 33? I'm not too sure which one he got cleared to do. It doesn't really matter because the maneuver is fairly similar. in either one of these. Runway 33, basically to line up on it, you have to basically go over the east bank of the Potomac, and then you make a left-hand turn to line up to the northwest. And you basically cut across the Potomac there. There's a bend in the Potomac. So all the final through there is going to be, roughly over the water. You start that probably around 500 feet. So you're probably about 2 miles from the end of the runway when you do this maneuver. But you're doing that turn through, 600 feet is when you're starting this thing.
Wow.
To turn, and you're descending on down. And given it, and here again, I don't have all the details, Bill. I'm speculating. If he is in that turn, he's going to be belly up to where that helicopter was. The helicopter was coming down the east bank of the Potomac. It had basically just, anybody that's familiar with the D.C. area, he was getting close to Bowling Air Force Base, the banks of where Bowling Air Force Base is. So if this CRJ was making the turn, he would have been belly up to that helicopter. And essentially, it wasn't directly head-on, but it was within about 30 to 40 degrees of being head-on collision. So it was pretty much a straight running into airplanes head-on. Very, very violent impact.
And we've seen the video. Everybody's probably seen that video. I think it was a security cam that really had picked it up. And it looked like the helicopter had not quite a bit of time, but some time. It seemed to be on that straight line for the aircraft.
Yeah, and I've heard the air traffic control recordings of them talking to the helicopter pilots, and the helicopter pilots claimed they had the traffic in sight. They said they had the CRJ-700 in sight, the American Airlines flight. And the things that puzzle me about the helicopter side of this story is I heard that they were on night vision goggles.
Yeah.
Which, now it's been a few years since I've flown night vision goggles, but flying night vision goggles in a place where there's a lot of lights,
ooh,
doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
You basically can get blinded because, you're amplifying the light several times, like several hundred times. So now, to put myself in the mind's eye of the helicopter pilots and probably what they were thinking, and here again, I'm just speculating, they were operating on 01. That was the runway the traffic was going to. And if you look at the video, there were other airplanes in that video.
Yes. Yeah, there is at least one very prominent one.
There's two.
Okay.
There's two, actually.
Okay.
There was one that was coming in on the approach
right
to runway 01, which would have made the CRJ-700 too close if they were to follow him into 01. And that's probably why they gave him 33 as a landing runway. The helicopter pilots are thinking everybody's on 01, and they're flying down the east side of the Potomac, thinking all that traffic's on the west side of the Potomac. And here's this airplane, and they have night vision goggles on, and you can't tell the intensity of the light. So they see the light and possibly think they're on 01.
Wow.
And instead, they're not. And it can be very confusing at nighttime with lights. You get a lot of visual illusions. And also, when you're in a collision course, lights don't move anymore in your canopy. So that should have been a clue to them that, hey, this isn't right. Lights aren't moving. We're going to hit this guy if we don't do something.
Here's more
speculation.
And
I think the helicopter's at fault.
Yeah. And if folks are wondering about this aircraft, probably if you've flown out of Tucson up to Phoenix, chances are you've been on a American Airlines CJR-700. It's kind of the workhorse.
Very likely.
80% of your flights up to Phoenix on American are on CJRs. Yeah.
Yep. And actually, I teach the granddaddy of the CRJ 700. That's
really
what I teach right now.
Hmm.
So the cockpit layout's identical as far as the windshields and everything like that. The avionics are obviously different. The wings are different. The CRJ 700's a bigger airplane. But the cockpit, as far as the layout is concerned, with the exception of avionics, is identical.
Hmm.
So I know what they could see out of those windows.
Mm-hmm.
And if the pilot was flying, or the captain, and he's looking across cockpit, he doesn't have a whole lot of vision range looking out the right windows.
Mm.
And if the FO was flying, or the first officer, he's going to be concentrating on aligning his airplane at that time at 300 feet. You are starting to, you know, get the airplane aligned.
Yes.
So he's concentrating looking out there. So it could be possible they didn't see it just because they were concentrating and had poor vision out that way.
Yeah.
But needless to say, given what I've heard, the CRJ seems to have been doing everything appropriately and correct.
Mm-hmm. And this accident, that plane originated in your hometown, Wichita.
Yes. Yes, my hometown. As a matter of fact, I found out my little sister, who still lives in Wichita, contacted me fairly soon after the accident.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, what? What now? Yeah. You know, you got it all wrong.
Yeah.
And when I finally saw the video, it was jaw-dropping, to
yeah,
be frank.
Was.
Or let's I mean, the last major accident was, the one in Buffalo. And that changed the whole rules and regulations on how airline pilots operate.
Actually,
so
I think,
I have a,
Jeff, we're going to take a quick question before I do the break. So we'll take the break a couple of minutes late. Jeff has called us on the live line for another Jeff, for Jeff Lattice.
Okay,
Jeff, go ahead.
Okay, I've got a general question. Given that area is so cramped, which it obviously is, and everything around there is so sensitive, why would anybody be flying training flights anywhere near
good
that
question
area? Why aren't they out at Ryan Field or Pima Airport?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Great question.
Thank you, Jeff.
I have no idea why. I personally, just with my experience with on the military side, I don't understand why they would not be flying like regular pilots would fly in that kind of area, right? It's all visual. And you need to be on the same sheet of music as everybody else. And obviously they weren't. And I don't get it. I don't understand Army training. I was an Air Force guy. So I don't know. I wish I could answer that better.
All right, but I'm glad Jeff brings it up. That's a great question. All right, we'll take a break right here. More with Jeff Lattice right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
You can now review and comment on the Regional Transportation Authority's draft $2.46 billion regional transportation plan at one of several upcoming RTA Next open houses. The draft 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, and environmental improvements for the greater Tucson region. It's your plan. Tell us what you think. Learn more and find dates for an upcoming open house near you at rtanext.com. nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. We send so many of our listeners over there, and it's a great getaway. Start your planning for your approximate three-hour journey over to Silver City in Grant County by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. What's to do over there? Well, a ton of outdoor activities and some wonderful New Mexican restaurants that do... Well, the question always will be, do you like the red or the green chili? Just depends on the mood I'm in, I guess. Anyway, southwestnewmexico.org for more information. The Live Line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We are utilizing the Live Line. Our contributor on aviation, retired JetBlue Captain Jeff Lattice. Jeff, before I ask you about the crash that happened in Buffalo and the changes that resulted after that crash, we did have a Facebook question that came in. What about President Trump and the finger pointing? And the FAA had several, I think they had just a, he had resigned just a couple of days ago, but you wonder, well, some of your thoughts about the changes, would that have impacted this crash?
Oh, I doubt if any of the most recent changes had anything to do with it. I think it was pilot error. I think, just looking at it, people lost their situational awareness. And thinking the airplane was someplace else because of stuff they're wearing. Until we actually get more of the evidence that gets collected, and that's what phase they're in right now. As far as finger pointing, the reason why that area right there by Reagan National is congested is because every government worker and every legislator that works in D.C. wants that airport open. And they want those airplanes there so they can get home over the weekend.
That's right.
That is the only reason
that
why that
is
airport
correct.
Is as busy as it is.
Yep.
They've tried to reduce the back in the Reagan days. Elizabeth Dole was the Secretary of Transportation and restricted the number of flights that went in and out of, at the time, National Airport.
Mm-hmm.
And you couldn't go past the Mississippi at one point if you took off out of that airport. And there were exceptions made and more exceptions made and more exceptions made because of government officials demanding that that airport work for them.
Yep.
That's the bottom line.
That is the bottom line. Jeff, were there changes that came out of the Buffalo crash, which was really the last commercial air disaster in this country?
Oh, yes. Very much so, but it dealt with the pilot's crew rest and how we would operate and how much we could operate per day. It restricted the number of hours we could fly per day was what happened at Buffalo.
Mm.
And it basically created a whole new regulation in the federal aviation regulations. this crash is going to be dealing with airspace.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's going to happen with this one. And you're probably going to see a lot more. You're probably going to see a reduction in traffic in that area. You're probably not going to see any more training flights going up and down the Potomac.
Yeah.
You know,
yep.
Things like that are going to change. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what the NTSB comes up with.
You know, folks that have been looking at the map of that airport at the airfield, they've got three runways, as you well know, Jeff Lattice, and
right.
They're all rather kind of short end runways. And that's a lot of traffic coming in and out of a very small piece of real estate.
Exactly. And they all cross.
Yes.
So there's crossing issues, too.
Wow.
Yeah, I never liked going in there. It was, trouble waiting to happen, whether you just get in trouble crossing a taxiway you're not supposed to or going to the wrong runway or whatever. It was a mess. I never liked it.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised, in a way, that this is like the first time we've had a major incident there in a long time.
Jeff, I've got a couple of minutes. Just a quick take. A week or so ago, we had the largest number of casualties in one day in the Ukraine-Russia war. I think it was over 1,300 Russians were killed or injured in one day. There were like 87,
wow.
87 artillery pieces, six tanks. What's going on with the air war in that airspace?
Well, from my understanding, the F-16s are flying right now, and, you know, they keep a fairly tight hold. They don't want to let people know because it gives away secrets, obviously, on tactics and such. But I can only guess that they're using some of the stuff that we gave them that we told the rest of the world we weren't going to use, and we said it was okay for the Ukrainians to use if they used it in their own country, and that's cluster bombs. A couple of different cluster bombs that we gave them are extremely effective against artillery and personnel. And I suspect that these are starting to take effect.
Mm.
So I know that we kind of had a little bit of texting going on there a week or two ago.
Yes.
About the
yeah.
tactics used by the Ukrainians.
The Ukrainian pilots have been flying really low. And that's
correct.
Something
yeah.
that the Air Force really gave up, as you well know, back in 1991, right, on low-altitude
well,
tactics.
Correct. And the reason why you go in low is to evade radar.
Oh.
Right? You get underneath the radar coverage. The first night of Desert Storm, we were talking about this, I went in low because we went in before the rest of the aviation packages were coming in into Iraq. So we were sneak attacking.
Mm-hmm.
Well, those were Soviet era tactics that we were using. And that's how you defeat some of these radars. Now, the Russians have a couple of really good radars.
Mm-hmm.
And they have that are long range. And you get down low below them. And they have some really good short range missiles that are really good. But their intermediates aren't as good. So if you can get past those long-range ones, you can get in tight enough that we can blow up artillery.
Ah, yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So
anyway,
you just have to know where that artillery is.
Very dangerous times in that war that continues.
It is.
Just a bloodbath, isn't it, on the ground for sure.
Yeah.
All right, Jeff,
yep.
We're going to have to let you go, and you've got to get back to work, and we're very, very appreciative appreciative of your comments about this air disaster last night. Thanks,
yeah.
Jeff. Have a great afternoon.
Well, it's unfortunate, but I'm glad to help.
Thank you.
Explain what might happen.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill.
Thanks a lot. Jeff
Bye-bye.
Lattice with us on the live line, and that's going to wrap it up for the Buckmaster Show. Again, we've got the Attorney General, Chris Mays, tomorrow on the Buckmaster Show. Kathleen Wynn with her program, Wynn Tucson, which is going from 9 to 11 one week from Monday, but right now she'll be up after CBS Network News. Have a great afternoon, everybody.